Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Everyday Bitcoin, a young Bitcoin podcast focusing on Bitcoin's use as money and focusing on Bitcoin adoption. Today, we are coming at you on February 20th, 2026, at a current block height of 937,587, current exchange rate to the US dollar at about $67,600 per Bitcoin. It's been up, it's been down, doesn't really matter, but what does matter is that today I am joined by Jesse Schrader of Amboss. Jesse, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Keith.
Yeah, excited to have you here. For the audience, I met Jesse about a year ago, end of January of last year. We were in El Zonte in El Salvador together. And then actually had a mini like little lightning class at the Bitcoin hardware store. And then we saw each other again at Plan B a couple days later. And then I forget if we saw each other. Were you in Prague last year? Did we see each other in Prague?
Not Prague. I don't think so.
Okay. Then I guess we just saw each other once. However, we did coincidentally, we did just see each other a couple days ago in New York at PubKey for an event, which was cool. So anyway, yeah, Jesse, welcome to the show. Good to have you. If you want, could you just get started? Tell us a little bit about like your Bitcoin journey and how you like found it and what brings you here today.
Sure. Again, thanks so much for having me. As far as like my Bitcoin journey, I think of course there's always like a couple of touch points, but you know, the first touch point was really one of the faucets, like watching ads and then getting paid Bitcoin. Okay. And then I promptly like gambled it away. And then, a couple of years later, I took a job like working in a call center handling class action lawsuits.
Oh,
and the first class action lawsuit that they put me on was where the bank reorganized the debit card transactions to maximize the overdraft fees that they could charge. So that was super unethical in my mind. And so I was on the lookout for like, what's the honest money? Like, what's the alternative to this banking system that like crashed the financial system and put me in a temp job role with an engineering degree, and then was taking advantage of people that literally had no money. So I was on the lookout for like what's a more honest bank, or what's the alternative to banking, and that's really how I found Bitcoin, and that's what made it stick.
Yeah. Okay. And what year was this? Sorry.
This was really 2017 when I started to get it. Okay. That's where I was starting to listen to Andreas Antonopoulos and hearing like the first bit about the Lightning Network on how we could improve the payment system for Bitcoin.
Because in 2017, I wasn't around back then in Bitcoin, but 2017 was when Lightning first came out, correct? Or was it 2016?
2018 was like 18. Really where it went live. 2015, I think, was when the white paper came out.
Okay. And for those listening at home that may be unfamiliar, just a quick little background. So Bitcoin on the base layer doesn't scale to a global audience, but since it's a protocol, there could be other layers built on top of it. And Lightning is one of the said layers that allow people to use Bitcoin for like paying for coffee. Jesse's fundamental to this. is there any other info you can provide about Lightning in general to like the average person so they can get a little bit of a background?
Maybe some things to know about Lightning is it moves transactions off Bitcoin's blockchain, but it always settles back up to the Bitcoin blockchain. Mm-hmm. So it's not introducing credit or debt or a new token. It's really just negotiating about who owns what Bitcoin and is able to chain together. So transactions can now hop on a different transportation layer for Bitcoin payments. And that enables micropayments. It also enables much more private payments. And it's cheaper and it's faster and you don't have to wait for block confirmations.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then I usually, when I'm explaining it to people, I kind of give like a bar tab analogy. Is that more or less correct? That you like transaction to open a tab and then back and forth, and then you close it and saddle up? Or how would you?
I've never prepaid for drinks for a bar tab, So, like, to me, that's where the analogy falls apart.
Okay.
But for the most part, like, I like to make a joint account analogy.
Okay.
Like, I'll put money into this account, and you and I can just negotiate about how to split it up, you know, if we decide to ever discontinue this joint account. But like a bar tab, I think works fine for most cases.
Okay.
No analogy is perfect.
Yeah. I like your analogy, the joint account, because it does make sense. Yeah, you're not paying up front. But I always say, like, oh, you give them your card, you open the channel, whatever, and then back and forth. And then whenever you want to, you both go your separate ways. Cool. So yeah, so that's Lightning for the listener at home. Much more technical and in-depth than that. And it's actually one of the areas I need to definitely learn more, and I want to learn more. But like Bitcoin, there's so many different like rabbit holes to go down that all are intertwined and interlinking, and it can really get lost in the weeds of it all. But it is fun, especially if you're a person that finds it interesting and likes to learn about these kinds of things. So you own a company called Amboss, which is I was telling the friend you met the other day at PubKey that Amboss is pretty central to Lightning and pretty fundamental. Is it correct to say that, or am I making it seem bigger than it is, or more important than it is? Are you like a cog? I know like Lightning is not just dependent on one, and then you, it's obviously very decentralized, but how would you describe what you're doing at Amboss and what you're providing?
Yeah, so there's the Bitcoin protocol, then there's the Lightning protocol that's built on top of it, and Amboss operates at the application level. So we're using these protocols to provide services and products, and I think most fundamentally coordination, because one fundamental piece of a decentralized network is, you know, we've got all these individual actors with all their own incentives, what they want to achieve, but in order for it to be functional and efficient, they need to be coordinated. So Amboss really provides that role, really by surfacing data, market data. Like, how are things being priced? We also operate the largest liquidity marketplace. So that goes pretty deep. But at the fundamental level, we provide coordination for decentralized network.
Okay. So kind of like, I don't want to say market maker, but like a middleman helping people talk and, helping people / channels talk on the network and providing the liquidity for them.
Yeah. Yeah. Middleware is like probably a good descriptor that might not resonate with everybody. There's other companies like Voltage where they run Lightning nodes, but really Amboss helps people get connected, almost like a social network for Lightning.
Okay. So if the average person like me, so I have like a Lightning node with Albi, and I kind of have one with, I guess, just Ellen, no. Yeah, just a regular Lightning node on my Start 9 linked to Zeus, but I actually don't really use it because it is a little daunting. It is a little overwhelming. So I just tend to use Albi because it kind of manages, or it makes it very easy to just like open a channel, manage liquidity. So do you guys normally, are you working with the average person or more technical people that are going deeper, or is it a mix?
It's a mix. So for like individuals, you know, the hobbyists with like an Albi node or a Start9, they'll like the more advanced ones will use our Magma marketplace.
Okay.
So they'll just buy channels and, you know, go to magma.amboss.tech and say, I want to buy $10 worth of channels. And that will enable them to receive thousands of dollars of, you know, payments. So really it's a replacement for, you know, any of the payment processing fees that, you know, a typical business would encounter.
So $10 would allow you, how exactly does that work? The $10 leading to, well, I guess it's more so needing a better basis for understanding inbound and outbound liquidity and how the whole system works. Are you able to explain it simply? like how, if I give you $10, what exactly you guys are doing and how you're, I don't know, opening the channels and putting me in. Well, yeah, opening the channels.
Yeah, so kind of building off of the joint account analogy, in order for you to like start receiving money, somebody else needs to create their joint account and like I'll put in, you know, $1,000, and as you get paid, the payout of this joint account, it will start to go more in your favor. So the payout for on your side will increase, whereas the payout on my side will decrease.
Okay.
So because I'm paying you. So
yes, like,
really, we're just kind of moving things off chain. But overall, in order for you to start receiving payments, you need to have a joint account with somebody, and they need to have some money on their side, you know, your counterparties, in order for them to move value over to you. So we created a marketplace where you just go in and pay for someone to open a channel to you, and that allows you to start receiving payments.
So okay.
It really coordinates the rest of the network to say, hey, you know, Keith wants to receive some zaps for making an awesome podcast so people can start streaming money to you. But you have to build the roads first in order for the value to reach you.
Mm-hmm. And is Amboss providing, you guys aren't actually opening the channels yourself, obviously not providing the Bitcoin, but you're just matching people up that have the Bitcoin already with the channel.
Yeah. On our marketplace, there's individual Bitcoin holders that run Lightning nodes.
Yeah.
They say, hey, I've got a Bitcoin that I can allocate on the Lightning network. Who should I open to? And instead of us just like telling them where to open or any of that, they just say what the prices are. And then when someone comes along that needs a channel, well, we'll notify them and say, hey, Keith needs a channel open to him this size. He's willing to pay the price that you offered, and we'll pay them, like Amboss will pay them to open the channel to you after, you know, you, Keith, you pay Amboss.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. I hope the
We source the liquidity from a decentralized marketplace that we set up.
Okay. I hope the listener is following. Because I think to somebody uninitiated, might be a little confusing. But I find it very interesting. And then, so how does Magma exactly, is that just like the name of the marketplace? Because I was always slightly confused, because obviously Amboss is the company and then there is Magma. But isn't there another service you have as well? Or am I mistaken?
We're a product making machine. Okay. So we built a whole bunch of them. So Amboss.space is a Lightning Network Explorer. Magma is the name of our marketplace where, you know, you can buy and sell Lightning channels. And then we've built other pieces, but primarily for businesses. So we built like a Reflex rules engine for any regulated business that needs to do compliance stuff on Lightning. We've also built Rails, which is a self-custodial yield service for the Bitcoin treasury companies. And then most recently, we announced RailsX, which does peer-to-peer trading. So that's available for consumers that want to participate, maybe want to start doing some arbitrage on the Lightning Network. Now that there's not just Bitcoin that's going to be there, it's going to be USDT and other stable coins.
So I knew USDT via Tether was making their way into Lightning, but there's also other stablecoins that are going to be in the mix.
Yeah, we're onboarding them now. Like I've been chatting with them this week to get them set up with Rails, which is how they're going to start distributing their stablecoins to the rest of the market. And so for other folks, they'll be able to go to our Magma marketplace and buy not only Bitcoin channels, but channels and other stablecoins.
And the other stablecoin channels, they're using Lightning Rails, but is there any, are they using Bitcoin at all? Or just the, I guess, the roads to transfer back and forth?
It's up to each individual. I think by default, everybody uses Bitcoin. Like Bitcoin is the common language on Lightning. But if you want to start receiving stable coins, then you'll set up separate channels to receive stable coins. And it will interoperate with the rest of the network. So somebody that's paying you, they won't know that you're receiving USDT. They'll just see a Lightning invoice, pay that, and it will convert in flight.
Ah.
So we're avoiding the centralized exchange completely.
Mm-hmm.
It's really just how it routes through the Lightning network. And at one point, at that last hop, that's when it converts to another currency. But that's private. So that means all currencies just become interoperable. They speak the same Lightning language.
Whoa. That's pretty intense. which I've heard, November I was in Nashville, I was there for work, but I ended up going to the Bitcoin Park for an event, and I sat in a class on Arc, or was it Arcade? I always confuse the two, Arc versus Arcade, and they kind of demonstrated that Lightning, even though we're using Lightning for payments, that ultimately it could just be like the glue that holds all these other payment rails together. Would you say that's more or less accurate way to think about it? Like the future of Lightning being not so much for payments, but more so the infrastructure for other protocols on top of that? Or
I think it's completely fair. Arc may be better for the average consumer because Lightning channels are complicated. It's unreasonable to expect that regular folks will run a Lightning node and, you know, buy and sell Lightning channels. Like that's going to happen for the folks that are doing some serious volume on the Lightning network. Whereas for Arc, they can interoperate with the rest of the network by using Lightning because it's instant and it has that finality that you don't have to introduce all this other trust. You know, it's not a separate blockchain. It's just Bitcoin moving around, and you have the very fast relationship. So you don't have to like wait on another chain to start doing other things. So Arc is playing around with like virtual transactions that it's kind of negotiating. So it's a completely different architecture, but it might make sense more for consumers.
Okay. Yes. I would love, ideally, I want to open more Lightning channels and I guess become a routing node. But from my understanding, you need to have some serious Bitcoin for it to actually be worth it. Is that correct? Or is that more of a, like, not true?
To be a profitable routing node, you'll need more Bitcoin.
Okay.
So for Rails, we instituted a 1 BTC minimum.
Okay.
I think really we want to see larger allocations because larger channels are more valuable. They can handle larger transactions. And we just saw Rivers report saying that Lightning Network is doing over $1 billion in transactions every single month.
Wow. That's awesome.
And the number of transactions are going down on the Lightning Network, but the transaction sizes are going up.
Interesting. That's interesting. I would assume they'd both go up together. Just more adoption, more people using it. Especially now with Square, obviously having their terminals being able to accept Bitcoin via Lightning. Interesting. Okay. I wonder why it's going down. Any idea? You have a personal theory on why it's going down?
The reasoning that the like River report put out there was a lot of experimentation going when the last time that they did their report. But overall, what we're seeing is just larger payments. And I think Lightning really started, I think people have in their heads that Lightning is for micropayments.
Uh-huh.
But now we're seeing the data, and that's not true at all. The average payment is now over $200 on Lightning. And Voltage just did $1 million transaction over like...
Whoa, $1 million.
So,
that's crazy. $1 million over
it's
Lightning.
It's becoming more established, and it still has the same fundamental principles of being trustless and instant.
Wow. This is super cool to learn about this. Very bullish. about the future of all this, if hearing these numbers go back and forth, because obviously people, the goal is to replace Visa, MasterCard and their duopoly and their fees and their extractive business models. So it's good to hear that Lightning is, because I've always heard like Lightning has the capacity, like, at least maybe I'm, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, obviously, but I've always heard like bandwidth wise, like Lightning can do more transactions per second than Visa, MasterCard networks. That's true, correct? Or
it's super true.
Super true.
Lightning can do 40 million transactions per second.
Wow.
The limiting factor is just how many devices you're using. So you may be able to do even more than that.
Wow.
And then for Visa and MasterCard, I think they're around 15 transactions per second.
Wait, really? Bitcoin, is that low?
It's super low. That's why micropayments aren't possible using Visa and MasterCard. But like, okay, like looking forward, you know, into like the AI economy, it's all going to be micropayments.
Yeah.
If I want to stream you payments like every minute of your podcast, like those are going to be micropayments. And I can do that over Lightning, but I cannot do that with Visa or MasterCard.
Yeah. Wow, that's pretty eye-opening. And I agree entirely that the future, it would make sense that the future is more micropayment-based. And ideally, we're able to enter more value-for-value world, at least in my opinion, where you send a micropayment to read an article or watch a video. I don't think we'll... Well, I don't know. I think there'll always be free stuff out there. But ideally, at least in my hope, is that people will want to pay because they know they'll be getting good content. And like I tell most people when I'm talking to about like friends and family in real life, when talking to them about like privacy tech and these things, is that if a service is free, then you are the product. So I tell people that I'm happy to like pay for Proton and give value for value on Noster and essentially pay for services, even if there may be cheaper alternatives or free alternatives, because ultimately, you know, we're just being monetized and that's not cool. Okay. Well, super cool and very bullish about all this. What was I going to ask? So in terms of Amboss, you guys are a smaller team. I think you just told me you were at 9 people ish. Mm-hmm. And when you started it, was it just you or did you have a small team to begin with?
The way it started was I was playing around with Lightning tools.
Okay.
I think I was trying to get away from the command line interface because, you know, I was really on board with this idea of faster, cheaper payments on Bitcoin because transaction fees at the time were $60. So it was crazy. This was like the height of 2017. Bitcoin was kind of going nuts. It was hitting $20,000 for the first time.
Yeah.
And transaction fees got completely blown out. So I was on the lookout for alternatives. Lightning was just getting started. And the only way to use it was like the command line interface and this one tool called ThunderHub, which was the first node manager that I used. And I was like, this is amazing. This is way better than Ride the Lightning, which was like the only other one. And I became a super fan. So I was using ThunderHub, and the creator of it, he saw that I was, you know, super passionate about it and I was helping other people in the Telegram chat. Well, he reached out to me and said, you know, have you ever thought about starting a business? And so we ended up teaming up to create Amboss. So, you know, my CTO now is Anthony Potdevin, who created ThunderHub. He's CTO, and I was like the social one that was helping people and doing customer support. So, yeah, I became CEO, and together we, you know, we raised 2 venture rounds and built out a team to really make Bitcoin much more usable and scalable and kind of create open finance using Bitcoin, using the Lightning Network.
Okay. Very interesting. And you guys are obviously growing. You're at 9 people now. And I assume you'll just continue to grow. I feel like you're a company that, as Bitcoin continues to grow, you'll logically just follow suit. ideally. But that's exciting. Do you, I don't know where I'm going with this question. Do you, what is your ultimate goal? Do you have an ultimate goal at Amboss that you're constantly working towards? Or do you, are you constantly, I guess, reevaluating based on what the market's saying and I guess the direction that Bitcoin's taking? Does that make sense to that question?
Yeah, I think for the most part, like, I was just having a conversation about, you know, where we're headed with all this technology. And I think right now we're at a moment that kind of reminds me of like the Great American Railroad and actually building out the infrastructure. It was like one of the biggest infrastructure deployments like in US history, which was like connecting both coasts of the US or like North America using railroads and creating these tracks. And what we're doing right now is making it possible for regular people to be able to deploy their Bitcoin and turn that into infrastructure that value will flow across. And they'll be able to capture the fees and benefit from this. And Amboss is providing the role of Standard and Poor, which is really kind of reporting what's happening on the Lightning Network, where people are deploying capital, what's the market like, and also just building the software that makes it easy for people to participate in a fully decentralized way, because that is the foundation of the future of finance, you know, with the lowest trust assumptions and the highest performance.
Yeah, hard agree. As long as we could minimize the need for trust as much as possible and keep humans out of needing to, what is the word, not manipulate, but get their hands into the financial system and how things work, ideally, at all. No human emotions or anything needed aside from just managing things on the overhead, but ideally, yeah, what you're saying, keep it decentralized and quick moving, and no need for trust. Because that's where obviously we get into the issue that we're currently in now, and that has plagued our society since the beginning of time when it comes to money and these things. Okay. Yeah, I love that you guys are specifically enabling the average person to begin to get involved with Lightning if they choose to. And I think it is super empowering to be able to run your own Lightning node. And whenever I if I'm using Lightning, it's either Strike or my own node, Albi. And whenever I use my own node, I always get like super like excited about it and a little like tingly in a weird way. It's like, oh my god, like this. And I tell people, and I don't think they find it as nearly as interesting as I do, that like, hey, this money I just sent, like, it went through my server at my house, even though we're like in a different country or whatever, and like I didn't have to like get anyone's permission to do it. And I don't know if that really resonates or lands with them, but I don't know. I think it's really fun and exciting just to be able to do that. I think that.
It's a fundamental change. I think regular people don't want to replace Visa and MasterCard. They're fine with like the way that things are. And I think many people have kind of like just resigned themselves to accepting that all of their financial transactions will be surveilled, that the banks will be able to see every transaction you make, wholesale that data to advertisers and serve them ads. But we don't have to be stuck in that system. Like, we can build an alternative, which is on Lightning, which doesn't use credit or debt, doesn't artificially inflate the money supply by creating these credit and debt relationships. And you have financial privacy, because I don't need to broadcast to the world every transaction that I make, and I don't need to package that up for advertisers to serve me more ads. Like, this is a fundamental switch. But like, regular people, like, if you wanted to just go out and compete with Visa and MasterCard, start up your own card network, like, you would need $10 million just in capital requirements before all the licenses, before all the lawyer fees. But with Lightning, you can compete with them in a meaningful way with $300 worth of hardware and a couple of transactions on Magma to get set up with liquidity. Yeah. Like this, we just lowered the barrier to entry to zero. Mm-hmm. Or sorry, to $300 plus a little liquidity fee.
Yeah. Yeah, it's awesome. And I feel like even if someone tried to compete with Visa and MasterCard, they would just like come in and just like smack you down and be like, nope, this is our game and you have to abide by our system. And I'm sure it's been done. I'm sure there's a lot of, well, obviously the whole system's corrupt, but I'm sure people have tried to compete and they were kind of just like, yeah, no, we own this space. You will play along. But yeah, if we could take them down, I mean, we will slowly but surely, gradually and suddenly, replacing Visa, MasterCard. Now, actually, one of the things when I'm trying to, you know, constantly ask merchants and stuff if they accept Bitcoin, and obviously they say no. And I tend to ask them or tell them, like, it's like digital cash. Like, what are you paying Visa, MasterCard, 3 or 4%? They're like, yeah. It's like, I know your profit margins as a small business are like probably 9 to 12%. Imagine if you could take that 3% and have it back in your pocket. It'll, you know, and they understand. I feel like the average person, it doesn't really land to them. It's like, I think it's just something they accept that because we're so used to, at least in the US, so speaking of the US, we're so used to using credit cards and just like, it is what it is. You just pay it. And people don't zoom out and realize that 3%, like it adds up over the course of a year. But, and for the small business, that's a really big difference when you're only around 9-10% of profit. So I think ultimately that'll be a big selling point and is what'll get merchants to, well, one, accept Bitcoin and hopefully eventually like prioritize and want to accept Bitcoin, like try to like incentivize the customer to pay in Bitcoin so they, you know, don't have to pay the fee and keep it more private to them. And just obviously when time, when they learn that you want Bitcoin and not dollars. It seems like
if we're successful with this, it means lower prices for everyone.
Yeah.
Because right now what's happening is merchants are increasing their prices because of the inefficiency of the settlement systems that they're using. So they're increasing prices by 3-4% mm-hmm. just because Stripe or Visa or MasterCard has an inefficient system and they're raking in profits because of this.
Yeah.
Now, with Lightning, worst case scenario, we can deliver that same value settlement service for 0.29%. So 10x, more than 10x cheaper than what they have right now. The money arrives faster, it arrives instantly. They have a better payment experience. They don't have to like battle chargebacks.
Mm-hmm.
And the major objection that I'm hearing is about volatility of Bitcoin.
Okay.
Because you know, merchants, they have fiat expenses. Like they have to pay people in dollars.
Yeah.
Their expenses are in one currency, but if you try and tell them, hey, you should accept Bitcoin over the Lightning Network, they're like, I love cheaper settlement because I'm getting killed by chargebacks and payment processing fees. But like, I'm so afraid of the volatility because they're taking on foreign exchange risk. Like if Bitcoin crashes, they won't be able to pay their vendors. Mm-hmm. And so that's why like we're so focused on bringing stablecoins here, because if I can do that, if I can do stablecoins over the Lightning Network, that means that you can pay Bitcoin like as a consumer and the settlement system is more efficient. The merchants can pay their bills that are fiat denominated. And the whole protocol is the same for everyone.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter what currency you're using. And I don't really care. But it's a stepping stone to everyone accepting Bitcoin. Because for them, it would just be the flip of a switch to say, I want to switch from dollars to Bitcoin. And I'm already using more efficient payment rails.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So ultimately, you do think stablecoins are the stepping stone to hyper-Bitcoinization? I think so.
Specifically stablecoins over Lightning.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I think, well, obviously, not obviously, but for those that have got that, for Bitcoiners that have gone down the rabbit hole, they realize how difficult it is to like change change your ways. And I think people don't want it. That introduces friction to change how you're doing something, to change how you're living your life. Or in the case of like finding Bitcoin and the friction, the mental friction of being humbled and realizing, hold up, what I thought is true is not actually true. But I think from the money standpoint, like you said, people are so used to just using the dollar and just using Visa, MasterCard, and just accepting it for what it is. And people's lives are already becoming ever and ever more stressful and more busy because obviously the money is failing. So people are working harder to keep up. They're not going to, unfortunately, because of the money. But yeah, it's difficult to have people switch and I guess see the reason why they should switch. But hopefully stable coins, they're still, it's still dollars ultimately. So that should hopefully be like a reduced friction. That's at least my hope, that people will go to stable coins. If they're not going to go right to Bitcoin, it's fine. I think obviously it's a bad decision, but if you're going to go to stable coins, and then maybe you'll start learning. Obviously, if you're using stable coins, you'll learn about stable coins, ideally how they work. And then I think inevitably you'll end up at Bitcoin.
People are already using stablecoins. Like $20 trillion was settled using stablecoins just this past year. I want stablecoins on Bitcoin because that means that the value transfer is happening through Lightning Node operators. Like that means that they're capturing yield from any of these routing events that they're, you know, helping to process. Like that's how we get meaningful disruption of Visa and MasterCard. It's like regular people are now part of the medium of exchange system. Bitcoin is primed to benefit from that.
Yeah, and taking it out of the hands of just some other exchange entity, replacing Visa, MasterCard in a centralized way, giving the power back to the people.
Exactly. Awesome.
Do you know, I do know outside of the US, at least in the third world, stable coins are really desirable. They're just having the dollar is desirable because the local currency is literal garbage. So I know stablecoins are highly used there. Do you know in the US if there is a lot of stablecoin usage? I don't think there would be.
It's really not.
Yeah, this doesn't make sense.
There's not a lot of stablecoins in the US.
Okay. Oh, at 20 trillion. I didn't realize it was that high for last year.
That's crazy. It's gargantuan. Yeah, if you start trying to move money between like Europe and Colombia, for example, that's where the stablecoin pairs are. Actually have the most liquidity and most volume. So if you want to like do less slippage, you typically use Tether on Tron for the most part, or you know, you'll use Binance peer-to-peer to do those trades. But most folks in the US have no idea that that is happening or what a fundamental role Binance is playing right now.
Interesting. I didn't know they were playing such a big role. And I'm like, you know, in the know, so to say, more so not connected, obviously, and understand and following what's going on. Okay, well, we'll wrap up shortly. But is there anything else you wanted to add about what you're doing with Amboss, or just a message to the average listener about Lightning? Anything in general you'd like to add?
I think right now is a super important time for Bitcoin to take on a role, not just as a store of value, but move into the next phase where Bitcoin is a medium of exchange. Mm-hmm. And like regular folks can take their Bitcoin and use it to create infrastructure for payments and be part of that fundamental shift over to a medium of exchange. And it's just the progression of Bitcoin. So do it in a fundamentally decentralized way that gives people more power over their financial future, where you're not beholden to someone else's policies. But
yeah,
beyond that, I think that's really the goal behind Amboss, is to make all of that possible. So I hope people join me on that journey. And we just redid our homepage, so I'll give a quick shout out of that. But it's nice. Amboss.tech to see all the stuff that we do outside of just the Lightning Network Explorer at amboss.space.
Okay, I didn't know about that. I think I saw an Oster today that you mentioned something about amboss.space, but I didn't know about amboss.tech. I'll check that out immediately. Great, yes, love it. We gotta, at least in the US, show people that it's money. It's not just an investment, and it's not a store. It's not just a store of value, but it's a medium of exchange. And I also believe that to succeed ultimately, the store of value needs to succeed as a medium of exchange. Otherwise, it'll just, I don't know, at least become just captured and centralized in some way or form. Great. So I'll put a bunch of links in the description to Amboss and to all the services there. I know you're on Noster. Are you also, I assume you're on X, Twitter, other places anywhere that you want to send people to learn more about you specifically? Or,
sure.
No, you're good.
Yeah, you can follow me on X at Jestifer_BTC. And then, of course, on Noster at Jestifer.
Yeah, real quick. So, Jestifer, when we first met and you gave me your Noster, you're like, yeah, I kind of just make memes and stuff. Well, what's the significance behind Jestifer? Is it like Fort Jester?
It was just kind of a funny nickname that I got in college because people kept asking me what Jesse was short for. And a friend of mine,
Jestifer,
humorously said, oh yeah, it's short for Jestifer, which they believed. So it was always just kind of funny for me. And then for Noster, I wanted to keep using Noster. So I just kind of committed to myself that I was going to post one meme a day on Noster, and then I could collect some zaps, because every time someone zapped me, I got a notification that someone zapped me. So I went back to Noster, and it kind of encouraged me to continue using it. So from there, I became one of the default follows on Primal. So when people join Noster using Primal, they end up following me, which is kind of just like taken on a life of its own. So I can still post memes on there and get some real good reach.
Nice. Awesome. I've never once thought that Jesse would be short for something, but I'm going to potentially start asking people that, other Jessies that I meet, just to see what they say. But as I like to kind of mess with people, like in an innocent way, but I very much like to mess with people. So I'm curious to see what kind of responses I get. And then I'll say Jestifer and see if they laugh. We'll find out. But great. Well, thank you so much, Jesse, for coming on and chatting with me and with the audience about Lightning, Amboss, all things. Hopefully it was interesting for the listener and not too technical for the person that didn't know what Lightning was ahead of time. I still have trouble at time wrapping my mind around it. But yeah, it's been great to have you on, and best of luck continued with the future of Amboss and empowering Bitcoin and the average person.
Thanks so much, Keith. Really appreciate it.
Thanks. All right. Bye.